The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have a eclectic show, I think, is the best way to put it. Actor Kevin James, his new Netflix series, The Race, is next week. I caught up with him earlier on his show. It's funny. I've seen it. Seen several of the episodes. Laugh out loud, funny. My wife and I laughed out loud at it. So Kevin James here in about 6-7 minutes. And then Tom Brenneman is going to be with us. Those of you here in Arizona that watch know Tom fully as the play-by-play voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks from their inception in 1998. And, of course, Tom through the years has been doing the NFL on Fox. And he met his wife here in the Valley. And Tommy is well known to many, 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 many people. And Tom last August used an anti-gay slur on the air during a Reds broadcast. He was the play-by-play voice of the Reds. He subsequently lost his job with the Reds. He lost his job with Fox. He has talked very little about where he is. And I reached out to him and said, I want to talk to you about where you are and why you said what you said and how it happened. I also want to talk to Tommy about Pedro Gomez, because Tommy knew Pedro very well, too. So Tom Brenneman and I, and it's long, it's very long, and it's pretty raw. So that comes up here in a bit, too. Our opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Jeff Mishi, the president of Desert Financial, sent me a nice text this morning about our interview yesterday with Jody Jackson. We appreciate their support. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. You can find them not only around the Valley, but before you know it, they will be statewide. It is where I go, Desert Financial Credit Union. I watched Suns last night. Did you guys watch the Suns? If you did, you're probably just getting up now. That was a game. It was a game. It was one of those where I watched early and the Suns are down 12 and they're down 16. At the half, they're down 12. The thing in the NBA is it usually goes like that, doesn't it? First quarter, if you're down big, second quarter, you're down even bigger. You make a little push towards the half, which the Suns did, and they were down 12. You want Giannis taking a fall away rather than Giannis 5 feet from the hole, which would have won the game for the Bucks. You know, I know that after the game was over, I watched the post-game Zoom interviews, and I watched Monty, and I watched Devin Booker, and Chris Paul. And I know that in this town that we are so starved for a winner. For years, when we first started doing this, I would voice my displeasure and have a death clock on the air that I would talk about, that it's been 2 years, 9 months, 8 weeks, 3 days, 2 hours since the Suns had a playoff game. And that slowly, slowly, slowly evolved into it's been 5 years, 9 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, an hour since Suns had a playoff game. And then it turned into 8 years and then 10 years. And here we are. It's coming up on the anniversary. May 27th, 2010 was the last time the Suns had a playoff game. You'll count the bubble, fine. I've turned the page on that, but I think it's just important to know where we were. And so I know the theme by some that I watch and that I read and I hear the questions being asked. This is all new to them in our world, in the media world. And I don't believe in jumping up and down and celebrating for a team. That's not what we're here to do. We're also not here to just sit there and crush them all the time. We're here to just look at things objectively and say, you know, objectively, here they are, the fourth seed right now in the Western Conference. We haven't had that in a long time. This is the best, what is it in my notes? 2009-2010 was the last time they were 15-9. I mean, if you think I'm getting on them, it's been 11 years. So, you know, I think it's important to look at it and say, what is happening here? What is happening here is Monty's stranglehold on the team has taken hold. They have a point guard that's younger, just better. You know, Ricky Rubio wasn't bad. He was a stopgap for Chris Paul. Devin Booker now has a running mate in the backcourt, a better running mate. DeAndre Ayton is a year older. Doesn't mean he's that much better. He's better. But, you know, a guy like Jay Crowder, no one talks about Jay Crowder. You know, I'm watching him play, and I'm looking at this on Devin in the All-Star voting, because it'll just give you an idea of what people view of him around the league. Jay Crowder had double digits in boards last night. Jay Crowder is not going to be an All-Star, but Jay Crowder has been in the NBA Finals. Jay Crowder is someone that I like. I like those guys that get inside other players' heads and get up in them. They muck and grind, use a hockey term, right? They're not afraid to roll up their sleeves and get dirty. They don't care what the stat line looks like. All they care is about a win. And so Chris Paul was talking last night about, yeah, we just need to get more victories and stack more wins. Devin Booker was saying the same thing, and that's right. You know, this team has won, what, 7 of their last 8. They have Philadelphia here on Saturday afternoon. Are they better than Philadelphia? I think they are. Do I think Devin Booker against Joel Embiid sounds like a lot of fun and the hype? Sure. But I think they're better. They're better than the Orlando Magic, the game after that. And so they have some games that you look at and say, and it should get to a point, it should, where I'm not sitting here saying, well, they beat the MVP last night. It's just like, no, that's not how they act with the Lakers. That's not how they act with the Bucks. In fact, they may be on the plane saying, we lost the Suns last night. They weren't even a playoff team last year, but they're much better. The fact that fans are being allowed in a small number, 1,500, it's great. They're going to increase that number to 3,000. I'm fine with that. I think anybody who goes to the extreme of we just cannot be out, if they're distanced properly, which they were last night from what I saw, I didn't see anybody without a mask on. They didn't show very many crowd shots. Like GCU last week, they showed their games against New Mexico State, and I got a lot of notes from people saying, I can't believe they have all those fans in the stands. Well, guess what? They were cardboard cutouts. There were some, and they'd show close-ups of students. Well, students are not going to keep their masks on. So some bad optics. Call it as we see it. But I think that if you're in a space where you're 6 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet apart, and I looked at where they were in rows and how they were spaced out and they had masks on, I'm absolutely fine with this. I don't think that that is being irresponsible. Who am I, right? You know, the epidemiologists are the ones that know. I believe that masks are important and should be worn, full disclosure. I don't think I'm alone in that category. There's the other side that says I'm never going to wear a mask, and then you can't go to a game. It's the way it is. It's a very good win for them last night. I think, I'm just looking at some of the numbers here from it, were when the team shoots 52%, which is a season high, you're going to win a lot of games. So the Suns are the big story today. Mark Cuban and the national anthem, this is a controversy that comes. It's not the first time. It certainly will not be the last time about not playing the national anthem at Dallas Mavericks games and then the NBA coming in and saying, no, you're going to play the national anthem at Dallas Mavericks games. Not everybody respects the national anthem. Not everybody pays attention to it. I don't think that that's right, but they don't. When I'm at Suns games or if I'm at sporting events, not everybody takes off their hats. Not everybody stops walking. Not everybody stops playing on their phone. Not everybody stops walking to their seat. People just go about their business. I think the point of over 40 different countries being represented in the NBA is something that does have merit to discuss. To discuss. So when you just come in and say, this is the way it is, I think having discussions, we just don't want to discuss things. We just, nope. It's just the way it is. It's the way it's always been. Well, that's fine, but do you need to do the national anthem, as some have pointed out, before you go to a movie? Do you need to do the national anthem before you go do other things, before you go to church? Do you need to do all that? So that those discussions, I think, are important. I do. I don't think you should shy away from that. And Mark Cuban said, fine, I respect it, but I do think we should have the discussion on it. So he's a lightning rod, and I appreciate him looking at things through a different lens. I do. I think that that's fine. And in this day and age, we just have too much. Nope, I don't agree with you. So that's it. It's the way it is. You're canceled out. No. All right, I'm going to lighten things up with Kevin James on the other side and then switch back to going deep with Tom Brenneman. That's in about 15 minutes On the other side, new Netflix series. It's really good. The Rays, Kevin James. Stay with us. All right, Daytona 500 gets started this week, and this is a perfect week to check out a very, very funny series sitcom on Netflix. Kevin James is with us. The series is called The Crew. I've seen several episodes, and it's hilarious from start to finish. Just how did this come together? Because with NASCAR and comedy tied together as one, it's really unique, Kevin. How did this come together?
It was exactly that. It was really unique. And to be honest, when I first heard about it, I go, I don't know how I'm going to make that world funny. Because they said, what do you think about doing a NASCAR sitcom? And I was like, it just doesn't feel like it matches. That just feels weird. I don't know the world that much, you know. And once I found out that NASCAR was involved and they wanted to do it, and I looked into it, and we checked out races and the sport. And the bottom line is it's still a workplace comedy within this massive platform of NASCAR. So you can be a NASCAR fan, or even if you're not a NASCAR fan, you're still going to be able to follow the characters, the relationships, yep, and their storylines, which is, you know, that's the basis of any sitcom, good sitcom to me. But this backdrop of NASCAR makes it, I mean, unbelievably awesome. So
how much homework did you have to do on the sport? Did you follow NASCAR before this? Did it just kind of jump on you? Tell me about that.
I was a fan when I was a young kid. I loved Richard Petty, but then later on, I wasn't exposed to it too much. So I didn't have it until about 10 years ago when I was doing promotion for a movie. I was a grand marshal at one of the races, and you see this stuff. You do the gentleman start your engines at a couple of these, and it changed my life because it's like, the world is just insane. I mean, everything is there. The tailgating outside of most sporting events is right in the center. They got their RVs, everything's cooking, setting up. I mean, they know how to do it. And the athletes and the pit row and the sponsors and the crowds and the fans and it just everybody. So it's an amazing sport, and learning about it, points, you know, and all that. There's so much to the sport that you don't know, you know, that I didn't know anyway.
Yeah. My wife laughed out loud several times, which I always, I always just have her say, hey, watch this. What do you think? And she's laughing and laughing. And so the writing part of it, you're the EP on this, one of several, right?
Yes. Yes. It's Jeff Lowell and a whole crew of writers though, that really deserve the credit there. Phenomenal writing staff, and it makes it easy when they give you good stuff to write, to say rather, and you got amazing actors. These actors, especially these young kids, man, they just crush it. You know, they're so good, and it's exciting for me because you know I got to stay on my game with them.
Before I get you out of here, Phoenix, Arizona, you have any ties here? Do you get out here? NASCAR out here is huge. The last race. Championship race will be here in November. They have a race here next month. Do you have any ties to Phoenix, Kevin?
Yes. I got a couple of buddies that are from the Sun Devils. You know, they went to college out there, and some wrestlers. And other than that, not too much, but I want to get out there again soon.
Thanks for the visit. Great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
All right, as promised, Tom Brenneman is with us for a few minutes. And I've talked about Tom and his situation in the broadcast booth last August ad nauseum on this show. And Tommy is now doing his podcast, Dialed In with Tom Brenneman. I wanted to have Tom to come on, though, to talk about what happened, where he is, where he's going, because here in Arizona, not a bigger name, not a bigger voice through all the years with the Diamondbacks, and he comes in and does the NFL than Tom Brenneman. And Tom, I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to have you straight up on your situation, your journey, I like to put it, when you and I were communicating. Mm-hmm. But before we get into any of that, Pedro Gomez.
Yeah.
That's all people are talking about out here. And I'll give you the floor on Pedro because you were right there with Pedro too.
As anybody that's ever spent any time around him, Brad, and I mean, I think it could be 10 minutes. Or it could be years and years and years and years. And in more recent years since leaving Arizona, I haven't seen him as much as I would like to, because I just thought he was such a beautiful guy. And that's the word that always came to mind being around him. There was just an aura about him. There was a warmth, sincerity, great smile, just a beautiful man. And my thoughts and prayers are with so many out there and around the country, and his family, obviously, who just were so fortunate to be around him for any length of time. And back in those days, when the Diamondbacks first started, of course, back in 98, he was around all the time. And he's gone on to bigger and better things. And I'm just so sad for his family. He was just a beautiful man is the only way I could think to describe him.
Yeah. We did a weekly here for the last 9 years when I launched this. And when you do a weekly with someone, you know this, you behind the scenes, you do a lot of on air, a lot of off air conversation. Sure. And sometimes it's better than the on air conversation, yep. quite frankly.
Yep.
But the thing on Pedro is he knew his stuff. Like he knew his baseball, he knew the sport that he was covering. Then he transitioned to do some Cardinals. So I'd see him in the Cardinal locker room as ESPN changed his role. But I think for someone like yourself, a play-by-play guy, you can see through when people don't know what they're talking about or writing about pretty quickly.
And I think he had such a, I just thought it was such an advantage. And I've always kicked myself through the years, Brad, for not doing it myself, but you know, with his background and being able to speak Spanish and spoke mm-hmm. perfect English, I just thought that he had such an in. And there are others besides him out there. Jose Mota up in Anaheim comes to mind, and there are others. But he just had such a unique ability to communicate and the ability to communicate with both the English-speaking players and all the Latin-speaking players. And they felt like they could not be as guarded around him because it wasn't going to get lost in translation, maybe something they were going to say, and they could speak to him just like they were speaking to a friend or a family member. And he knew his stuff. He knew the game up one side and down the other and had great opinions about the game and thoughts about the game. Not only the X's and O's of the game, but about the macro picture of the sport and where it's going and where it's headed. He was on top of his game. There's no question about it. And he's going to be so sorely missed.
I saw him get mad once.
I never saw that.
I was on the first baseline, Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and it was when Puig had just come in and was doing his thing. And it was driving Pedro crazy. And I'm with Gonzo and Pedro, and Pedro's like, we got to go say something to him. He's disrespecting the game. He was getting, the veins were popping out.
Sure.
And you remember when Puig first came on the scene, it was not a great experience for a lot of people. He was a lightning rod. And so, you know, go back on that for me. And I look at him and say, I never saw him lose his composure or his cool.
I never saw it. So you one up me there. I never saw it. He was just always pretty. You know what, though? I think the closest I saw, didn't he have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he had a run-in with Curt Schilling when he first came to the Diamond. Am I remembering that right?
No, you are.
Yeah, when he first came, and I think Pedro had written something, and Schilling wasn't even with the club longer than maybe a couple of weeks. And I think he called Pedro out on it. And, you know, I totally got Pedro's back on that one because Schilling really didn't know much about anything going on with the team at that time. And everything that Pedro wrote was completely accurate. But, you know, Kurt's Kurt. And it's one of the things I always liked about Kurt is he wasn't afraid to say something to your face rather than, you know, saying it behind your back. But, yeah, I guess I did see him a little bit upset that one time, I guess.
Yeah. Tom Brenneman with us for a few minutes. Okay, let's go back to last August. What happened?
Well, you know, it was just a situation where we were in a commercial break, Brad, and I used the word that I used, and it's a terrible word. It's a word that, quite honestly, my entire life, I've grown up and heard that word, starting when I was a teenager and a kid. Haven't heard it as much in recent years, and certainly haven't used it much in recent years, but I have used it. And, we were in a commercial break. I used that word. The first game ended. It was a doubleheader. The Reds were playing the Royals. And we were broadcasting like all the teams were when the team was on the road off of television monitors.
Yep.
The Fox Sports Ohio studio. And so I got into a little cubicle and I was writing down the lineups for the second game. And I got a clip of what I said that went out over MLB.tv, and it was from my boss. And I knew right then and there on the spot that it was over. I knew the Reds gig was over. I knew that the Fox gig was going to be over. And now my mind's swirling. I get back, start the second game, find out only an inning or two in that that I was being taken off the air. And I just said, well, I'm not going off the air until I have a chance to at least assemble some kind of an apology, which I did the very, very best I could, live TV. And, you know, it's become kind of a, joke, I guess, on the internet. I'm not on social media. But, you know, I'm in the middle of an apology and I'm watching the whole, world around me kind of come crashing down, professionally speaking. And then I call a home run by Nick Castellanos. And, you know, everybody likes to, sort of make fun of that thing now. And that's fine. I'm the one who said it. And, you know, I got home that night and at first the Reds were very supportive, but I had said to my wife after I hung up the phone, from the first conversation, I had said, well, the tenor of this conversation is going to change as this night goes on. And I was sitting on my back porch. It did begin to change, very much so. And by the time I got up the next morning, I was suspended from both jobs. So since then, I've done my very best to try and grow from it and learn from it, not crawl in a hole. Within 2 days, started to meet with a lot of the LGBTQ community leaders in Cincinnati, who have just been so full of grace and kindness and support. I was reminded by one of them that I should not have been surprised by that because, that's a community that frequently is on the outside looking in on a lot of things and ostracized in a lot of ways, beginning from childhood and through teenage years. And so, the more I got involved, the more I realized that this was a very good thing for me and something that needed to happen. And so I've continued to bridge those relationships. I probably spent in the last, 180 days, whatever it's been, probably 60 of those, 65, 70 of those in some form or fashion. Either meeting with LGBTQ leaders, talking to them on the phone, going to different meetings, and really trying to become an ally to a group of people that that I really, really hurt. And I'm ashamed by it. My kids are still in high school. And so, like that, Brad, they went from their dad being a, moderately successful guy and known around town for, you like to think more good reasons than bad reasons. And all of a sudden, they Googled their dad the next day. Now I'm a homophobe. I've never been a homophobe my whole life. I can sincerely say that from the heart. Not for one second have I ever had anything that would resemble that. But that's what some people in this world think I am. And so, if there is such a thing as trying to right a wrong, then I'll continue in that pursuit.
When they are not accepting, how's that been over the last 6 months in terms of mail and email and the internet, like you said, in this day and age of being, you're not online, but the people that aren't accepting of the apology, how do you handle that? How do you process that?
Well, you can't make one thing I've learned, Brad, and you would have thought I had learned this as a broadcaster or in any walk of life, but a broadcaster is a pretty public job. And so, you have people that, whether it's a game thread on an internet site, whether it's a clip from a game and you're doing an NFL game and, you can't make everybody happy all the time. And I've come to that realization on this particular topic. One of the meetings I had, it was on my birthday. In September, and the real leading voice of the LGBT community here in Cincinnati is a guy who's a very, very successful business guy with Johnson & Johnson. He had me and about 14 other LGBTQ leaders from in and around the entire region, not just Cincinnati. There were a couple that drove up from Louisville and Indianapolis and Columbus and that kind of thing. And there were two guys there that really let me have it. And I had said at the beginning of the meeting, I'd said, look, before we go any further with this meeting, I want everybody here to understand, and I'm begging you to not share this with anybody. I am not here to check a box to get my job back because I've lost both of my jobs. I mean, that was already a done deal. It hadn't been announced, but it was a done deal. I was out.
Fox and the Reds.
And the Reds. Clearly, it was over. Yeah. I said, so I'm not here to try and check a box. If some of you think that I might be here to do that, to try to get my job back. There were two guys there that, you know, they let me have it, and rightfully so. And it was a good thing to hear. It was hard to hear. It was very emotional to hear. But they thought I was nothing more than a common fraud and a bad guy and all those things. And there might be people in this world that think you're all those things, but rarely do they say it to your face. Mm. And so that was a tough day, but it was a good day. And so, you know, the support, though, from so many in that community, whether it's letters to the editor, whether it's asking me to be involved with their groups or their meetings, whether it's speaking in front of transgender kids or LGBTQ, gay kids, whatever it might be. There's a children's home right across the river from Cincinnati here in Northern Kentucky that's one of the most highly credited children's homes in the country. And it's a home, basically, where kids have been thrown out of their home for being gay or transgender. I mean, their parents just kicked them out the door and they have nowhere else to go. Mm. And so that's been an incredibly enlightening experience. And were it not for somebody saying, okay, we're okay with this guy being a part of our organization, and I'm forever thankful because it's been good for me. And I hope at least a small sliver has been good for them.
Who's helped you most?
I would say Ryan Messer, the guy that I just made reference to with Johnson & Johnson. He's a guy our age. He's, you know, late 50s, mid 50s, very successful business guy. Would not fit the billing of what some might paint. And I've come to learn this part too. You know, it's like politics, Brad. There's, you know, a little bit right of center. There's a lot in the center, and then there's a lot way out to the left of center. And so, mm-hmm. I wouldn't consider this guy to be some kind of a radical member of the LGBTQ community. I think he saw from the beginning, in fact, 2 days after I said what I said, I'd never met the guy before. And he wrote a letter to the editor that says this guy should not lose his job. And here's why. Mm. And here are some of the things the Reds could start to do to make the gay community a bigger part of their fan base and all these kinds of different things. And I would say that he, along with a guy named Sid Ziegler, who started Out Sports out in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. he's known as really the voice of Olympic athletes who are gay. And, you know, he wrote a similar article like the one that Ryan wrote a couple of days after. I just saw the article. Somebody sent it to me and I saw where you could email him. So I emailed him out of the blue and I just said, hey, this is Tom Brenneman. I'd really like a chance to talk with you. And so ever since then, we've started a friendship that I have no doubt is going to last a lifetime.
Do you play the moment back over and over and over, or just when you do interviews like this, is it behind you? Do you think that moment, it's got to stick with you in some way for the rest of your life in some part of this was part of my journey, but do you wake up and say, if the microphone had been turned down, if I didn't have this in me, do you play the what if game at all, Tommy?
Nope, not for 1 second, because there's nothing, Brad, I can do about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that particular moment, it's out there, it's gone, and it will forever be a part of who I am. And no matter what I do for the rest of my life, it'll stick to my family's name. You know, my kids will hear about it as they continue to move forward in high school, and I'm sure they'll go off to college, and our daughter next year in her freshman year, good Lord willing, wherever she's going, is going to run into somebody. Oh, your dad's the guy that fill in the blank. Mm. So I can't waste that negative time and energy thinking about that. I've just got to be able to think about, okay, what can I do today to be a better guy and try to share some of that experience and what it's been like with other people so that they won't make the same mistake that I made.
Did you learn who was in your corner and who was just there to be alongside of Tom Brenneman, to say they're alongside of Tom Brenneman?
No doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing on this, and this is completely different. When I left to do this, Jerry Colangelo pulled me in his office and said, you know, you're not going to get asked to the nice parties. you're not going to get the nice seats. You're going to find that people won't return your phone calls. You're going to and it was just like, and I never knew.
Yeah.
Obviously in your position, did you have people just ghost you and disappear that you thought, I thought they'd be here for me?
Yeah. 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 There's no, well, I mean, Jerry's as wise a man. You and I both know him well, Brad. I mean, he's as wise a man as I've ever met And I've said it 10, 18,000, 50,000 times. He's the best boss I ever had when he and Rich Dozer were running the franchise. And, yeah, you do. You find out who your friends are. You find out for sure who they aren't. Mm-hmm. And those are good things to learn in your life. Mm-hmm. They really are. I live in a very small community east of Cincinnati and only has, it's like Mayberry. We only have like 2,500 people that live here. And our public high school has about 105 kids in a graduating class. And so you really know just about everybody in the whole town. And, and they've been incredibly supportive. My wife, Polly, the same, you know, and our kids, and my dad has been unbelievable. And, but you know, then all of a sudden there'll be people, Brad, that you've come across in life that you knew a little bit and you were never really close with, but now all of a sudden they, for whatever reason, start to reach out frequently. Mm-hmm. Bob Costas. You know, I met Bob Costas when my dad was announcing the old ABA, and he was announcing the Virginia Squires games. So Bob Costas was like 25 years old, and he's announcing the St. Louis Spirit games. And I remember meeting him, and then in subsequent years, would run into him from time to time as we all got older and our careers were going at this event or that event. Recent years, he's been doing games for the MLB Network. And every time I saw him, he couldn't have been more pleasant. He'd sit down, and if we were doing a Reds game. And I remember the last time I think I saw him was a couple of years ago. The Reds were playing at Fenway Park in Boston, and he was doing the game on the MLB Network. And he came in and had dinner with my dad and me right in the media room there. And, but ever since all this has happened, he has just been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, he called the Cubs unbeknownst to me and recommended to them that they hire me for their job that opened up this winter. Obviously that didn't happen. He's called so many people on my behalf and I've never asked him to do it one time. And he's just one guy, I guess, maybe more than another, not just because he's so well known, but because he is well known, the fact that he certainly has a hell of a lot more important things to do. But he's just been amazing. And there are many others. I wouldn't want to leave anybody off the list because the list is very, very long.
Tom Brenneman with us. A couple other questions. I'll get you out of here and I appreciate your time. People that poured into you that you are friends with that said, what happened? Why did you? And now they're your accountability people in your life. I have to imagine, Tommy, that there's some people that are now saddled up alongside of you that want to help you, lock arms with you. I like to use the scene out of the movie Twister when I talk to men when they're in trouble at the end, when they have to handcuff their arms to the pole so they don't get pulled up in the tornado, right? So you have to have had some of those people, I would think, that just say, you know, Tom's on an island. I got to lock arms with that guy and help him through.
Well, there have been so many of those people. You know, I mean, it could even be a guy down the street who, you know, I'd see out walking our dogs or whatever it might be, but his kids maybe graduated 4 or 5 years ago and don't have any connection with him or any form or fashion that I remember just happened a couple of days ago. I was out walking the dogs and there's this guy that walks for exercise, walks up and down my street. Mm-hmm. I see him every day. We always say, hello, hey, Bob, how you doing? Hey, Tom, how you doing about it? And that's really been about it for a long time. And so he stops me 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And he says, you know, he said, I listened to one of your podcasts when you interviewed the guy. And one of the guests that I had, Brad, the Cincinnati Children's Hospital is always ranked in the top two or three children's hospitals in the world every year. They developed the polio vaccine here. They developed the lung vaccine here. It's a very, very special place. I only bring it up because a guy here in town who's a business owner was a big football star at Mount Union, which is a big Division III power. They've won 15 or 20 national
great
championships.
Great school.
Yeah, great school. Great football program.
Yep.
And he was my guest, this guy, on my podcast. And he had a son named Luke. And it's an incredible story, how he noticed as Luke is starting to grow up that Luke was playing with dolls and Luke was doing a lot more things than maybe some of the girls were doing. And it culminated with, they were supposed to go to dinner with this guy's parents, this child's grandparents, and they were in Florida. And the son said, I am not going to dinner unless I can wear a dress. Well, here's his dad, this big macho, and he is. I mean, he looks like he still plays football now. And he is so angry. He takes the son to Macy's down the street from where they're staying in Florida. And the child walks in with a dress, puts the dress on, comes walking out the door. And the guy explains it, that he realized at that moment in time, this is what life is going to be like now moving forward. And I have two choices. Am I going to love my child the way any mother or father should? Or am I going to go the other way, like some of these kids at the Northern Kentucky Children's Home?
Yeah.
Well, he did the former rather than the latter. So he opens up this $3 million, puts in $3 million of his own money in conjunction with the Cincinnati Children's Hospital to be the leader in the country for a place where families whose kids are transgender or gay or whatever the case might be, and they go there to get help that they otherwise would never find anywhere else. So I had the guy on the show. So now back to the guy walking down the street. He says, I heard that podcast. He said, I have a daughter who's gay. And I'm like, oh. And, you know, thinking, oh, you know, here's a guy that said the word that I said. And he's like, I got to tell you, he says, you know, to be able to bring something like that and put a guy like that on your podcast, he said, my daughter wrote me from Charlotte that she had heard it because I told her to listen to it and thought it was a great thing. So, you know, you asked originally, and I've answered in a far too long-winded way about, you know, way people that kind of all of a sudden sort of just latch on to you and have some kind of connection to you. That's a really good one.
You're out speaking on this subject now. You are going on the corporate side. It sounds like you're wide open to speak to anybody and everybody and anybody who is willing to listen and give you a chance, right?
Yeah, I got a phone call from a guy named Jim Host. If there's a Mount Rushmore of collegiate athletics from a business side, he would be on it. He was the first guy who came up with the idea about universities and colleges should be getting rights fees for their basketball games and their football games. He developed the corporate sponsor of the NCAA. This is going back 34 years. Yeah. Legendary guy, Host Communications, sold IMG Learfield. And he lives in Lexington, Kentucky, which is about an hour and 10-minute drive from Cincinnati. He said, I'd like to meet with you. This is about a month after it happened. He said, you know, the long and short of it is, I'm going to tell you three things. He said, one of them you don't want to hear. Second one, you're going to be dumbfounded. And the third one, you're going to say, this is a crazy old man from Lexington, Kentucky who doesn't know what he's talking about. So he says, number one, you're not going to get hired to broadcast anytime soon. You may not want to hear it, but you're not. And you got to come to accept it. If it comes along down the road, we'll see. But it ain't going to happen soon. Number two, he said, there might be people out there that know as much about collegiate athletics as I do. He says, nobody knows more. He said, and in this environment we live in now, whether it's race, inclusion, whatever it might be, you've got universities, you've got athletic departments, you've got companies, corporations spending hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars a year, focused on these kinds of topics. He said, and what happens is a lot of times people who come in to do those seminars are people who, they all mean well. They might be an HR director at fill in the blank. He said, and all of them can talk the talk. He said, but there are very few of them that have to walk the walk. And he said, you're having to walk the walk. He said, therefore, I think this is a company you could start and it would be so successful, which leads me to the third thing I told you, where you're never going to go back to broadcasting another sporting event in your life again, because you're not going to want to, because you're going to like what you're doing now and you're going to be making a difference in people's lives. So he said, put together an outline of what you talk about if you could do this tomorrow. So I did, tweaked it a little bit, called up Bob Huggins, an old friend, the basketball coach at West Virginia. And I asked him, I said, do you mind if I come speak to your basketball team? He said, absolutely love to have you. And God bless him for just giving me the chance. He's been a good friend for a long time, and he's an even better friend than I thought he was by letting me come. That went well. I was asked to speak at the NACTA convention, which is a National Association of College Directors of Athletics. And so now there are some athletic departments that are calling me on the phone to ask me about coming in to speak to their student athletes. And basically, Brad, I don't have the answers on race and inclusion. What I can share with people is that the words we use, whether they be written, whether they be spoken, or especially for young people and even older people, a social media post, and how that can literally take your life from going in this direction and go straight in that direction in the blink of an eye.
So true.
It can happen to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. You're doing the podcast Dialed In with Tom Brenneman. Tell me about that.
Well, we had Urban Meyer on the first one. Again, an old friend. Gotten to be better friends with him since he came to Ohio State. I see him quite a bit. He has a son that started playing baseball at the University of Cincinnati, where Urban went. Mm-hmm. And now he shifted over and he's on the football team. Needless to say, pretty good athlete. But so he's in town a lot. Both of his sisters live here. His father passed away here a couple of years ago. He's in town a lot. So had him on the first show. Had Brian Billick, my old partner, on the second show. Had Troy Aikman on. And now tomorrow morning we'll tape Chris Spielman, who was just named the president of the Detroit Lions. Right. And so, and then we'll step out of the box. Every blue moon, like the one with Chris Ciccinelli that I referenced a moment ago, I found three sponsors, had to go out and sell it myself. And I asked all three of the sponsors if they would donate the time to a charity or an LGBTQ organization. So if you ever listen to the show, all the sponsors are the Children's Home of Northern Kentucky, this organization that Chris Ciccinelli started, and then a place called the Talbot House, which is a place to get people kind of back off their feet if they're, you know, addictions, alcoholism, that kind of thing.
Mm. That is so good.
Well, and so far, so good. Yeah, I mean, people have been great. And, you know, I worried for a while that there might be people who, if I asked them to be on the show, even though they were friends, you know, they've got their reputations kind of hang on to and cling to. And thank God, so far, none of that.
That's great. How would people find that podcast, Tommy?
You go to it's on Apple, Spotify, any of the above, just called Dialed In with Tom Brenneman. And the same with the website. The website is Dialed In TB, like Tom Brenneman, dialedintb.com.
Are you going to go back to broadcasting? Your friend said no. You know, you're never going to go back.
Yeah, well, no, I would go back for sure. I hope I get an opportunity to go back. But that's out of my hands, Brad. You know, I've pretty much told myself now that it's not going to happen. I'm a very optimistic guy. I believe that there will be someone who will take that chance one day. Somebody, somewhere. They're going to say, okay, you know, was he the perfect broadcaster? No. Was he the perfect human being? Absolutely not. But for 34 years, you know, I really didn't cause any of my employers any embarrassment or any issues or any problems. And so, you know, hopefully there'll be one person out there that'll say, okay, well, you know, I'll answer some of the tough questions for 15 minutes in a press conference. But as I shared with my boss at Fox, Eric Shanks, who's a good man, really good man, good guy. And he was on the crew with me when I started at Fox in 1994. He was a guy working in the truck in the graphics department. Now he's the president of Fox Sports.
Yep.
And I shared it with him. I just said, look, I said, I don't know much in this world, but I do know this. I would challenge that if somebody asked you about hiring Tom Brenneman back and bringing him back, you could look at that person with confidence and you could say, if you go back over the last 6 months, we don't have anybody else in this building who has tried to do more in the gay community than he's tried to do. Has he accomplished everything? No. Is there more work to be done? Absolutely. But in the last 6 months, you could stack up what he's tried to do with anybody we have that walks onto this lot at Fox Sports every single day, gay or straight. Hmm.
Stick with it. Stick with it. It's good to see you. It's good to hear you from a distance. I've been watching your journey and wanted to have you on and have you talk to the people out here in Arizona and those around the state that you're wildly popular back then. It's good to see you get back up on your feet and get after it, Tom.
It's such a great place, Brad. You take care of yourself, my friend. God bless you. And I can't wait to get back out there sometime soon. My wife was just back out there last week getting her mom settled into her apartment she moves in for the winter. So we still have lots and lots and lots. My wife was born and raised there in Arizona, so we have lots of connections and come back frequently.
That's Tom Brenneman, and we're back with more after this time out.